Welcome back to another episode of Stacking Denny's. I'm Jordan McAbee of Rotoballer, my co-host Nick Giffen of the Action Network. Special guest Stephen Malazzi is back, NASCAR Truck Series driver Stephen Malazzi, for this Monday race edition of Stacking Denny's. We got a lot to talk about, but first we got some news to break. Some people might know based on your tweets so far.
Yeah, I'm not. I might be a little cryptic, but I'm not that cryptic. We're running it back. We are running it back. Stacking Denny's, Ozark Fishing Rods, win the race, 22 at Martinsville. And look at the bright side, guys. I don't think there's 36 trucks on the entry list, so we're going to finish better than we did last year. Everybody's got those 22 trucks going. I'm excited. Obviously, I can't say thank you enough to everybody who's hopping on board, and it's going to be a good one. I'm excited for it.
Apples. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. This is actually for real.
This is just
No April Fools. No April Fools.
Yeah.
Some people on Twitter, when I dropped my cryptic tweet a few hours ago, were like, April Fools, haha, he's not doing it. It's not an April Fools joke. We are really going to Martinsville this Friday, and I'm excited about it for sure.
Yeah. Running it back, like you said, second year in a row.
Yeah. First repeat track in my career, too. First time I'm going to a track without the rookie stripe on it.
Nice.
It's really exciting because with the way that NASCAR is structured and with my limited experience in stock cars going into my truck series career, every minute on the track is valuable. But I think having a repeat track will really shorten the learning curve a lot because obviously, you know, I'm a lot less fearful of Martinsville going into it despite not having the full race and despite doing some rain laps on it. I have a lot more experience in Martinsville than I do any of the other five races I've done in my career, you know, going back for the second time. So it's definitely something I'm excited about for sure.
The best part about it, last time I checked, no rain in the forecast.
None. If it rains.
I think it's supposed to be cold as shit, but no rain in the forecast.
It is. It's looking like 50 degrees out. So honestly, though, for me personally, that's a relief, right? Like I don't have a cool suit or anything. So having a cold racetrack is much easier, and a cold like environment is much easier to manage than it being so friggin' hot that I'm sweating my balls off.
Nice.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, we got Ozark Rods on it as well. I can't wait for people to see this paint scheme. Like obviously, the purple Stacking Denny's win the race scheme from last year, Louvre Bella Wines, it can't be topped. But this next one, oh, I can't wait till you guys release it, till we get the okay to send it out. It's going to be black paint scheme with the red logo of Ozark Rods. Make sure you check those guys out, ozarkrod.com. You know, they're jumped on board for this race at a last-minute opportunity, and they were all in. I mean, they probably said yes just as quick as Nick and I did. So awesome to see that. Stephen, what are your expectations for this race? You know, what are your goals? Because we know, like, you definitely improved during practice last year, and then the rain came and that just kind of threw everything out of whack.
Yeah.
What are you kind of expecting this time?
So there are a lot of factors to consider here, and like you said, we were improving, right? And even when we were racing, we were consistently 32nd, 31st. We were never the slowest car on the racetrack during race pace time. And even at stage one, where we laid 4 seconds off at the start, because who would have thought the truck series in the rain ended up being perfectly clean the entire time we were on rain tires? I was like, I'm not going to wreck my stuff early on. I'll lay off a few seconds, see what happens. And then, of course, it goes green all the way until we switch to slick.
Yeah.
And, you know, before the battery failure, we were, like I said, I think 30th, 31st. And that was a significantly more competitive truck field than this year's. This year's has not had a full field really outside of Daytona. You know, I expect there only to be 33 or 34 trucks. And I think RBR has been running way better than they were last year. Lawless Allen in the 33 has really been showing out. And you know, his auto park at guys have been doing a great job this year. And even the 22. The 22 is 24th in owner's points right now. They've been having some decent showing, some decent speeds. The only disaster for the 22 in constant theme was Bristol, which, you know, seems to be a continuing thing for the 22 truck. I think they got stuck with Matt DiBenedetto 1 year. They locked bumpers and yeah,
I remember that.
Then it was the Outback, you know, truck, which was so much PR and not a lot of speed. And then, you know, obviously at Bristol this season, it wasn't a great run for them. But I think at Martinsville, we didn't bring terrible stuff last year, and I think we're only going to get better this year. So I was just talking to someone about this. My goal for Martinsville, realistically, is to stay on the lead lap. I would love to do that. If not, no more than one lap down, right? And that would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Top 25 finish. I would love a top 25 finish. That means we beat either 8 or 9 cars. My goal is to beat 5 cars on speed, and that mm-hmm. would be fantastic. I mean, that's realistically where we expect to be. And I think that anything better than a top 25 is really good looks for us. And I think that's – you always can – Martinsville's been 50-50 with the truck series the past 5-6 years. It's either a complete crapshoot, you know, everyone crashes and there's a lot of cautions and a lot of wrecks and you can kind of work your way through the field, or like 2 or 3 cars DNF and that's it. Mm-hmm. And like we saw last year, half of that was a product of it being under caution for so long. But sometimes everyone finishes and, you know, you get unlucky with that kind of break. But I think with a little bit of magic, with a little bit of luck, we can get a finish in the teens. I really believe that. I've never been more confident in a combination of my knowledge as a driver and the equipment going into a race as I have been in this one right here. So I'm excited. Like I said, I think if we get on the lead lap and finish in the top 25, that means we were there, right? We weren't that far mm-hmm. off. If there's a lot of chaos, I think a finish in the teens is really possible. Knock on wood, but you know, my MO has kind of been bring home the truck in one piece, right? That's sort of been the goal.
I will say, and you know, credit to the truck field this year, there hasn't been as much chaos as we've seen in the truck series in the past, but you never know when it'll, you know, spark up. You never know. And that's the thing about the truck series.
Exactly. It's been super bizarre. It really has not. There hasn't been a lot of chaos at all. And I wonder if that is a lot of migration towards the top 20, right? Like the top 20, anybody in the top 20 is a truck that you could see winning week in and week out, right? Like I mean, obviously you got your favorites, but
sure,
there are 20 trucks that are probably race winning trucks that like they want to be like, yeah, that's not that surprising. And a lot of the very back of the truck field, the people who have mechanical failures, DNFs, a lot of those guys are gone this year. So you get less cautions that are natural cautions, which mm-hmm. doesn't breed those restart cautions, which right. gives the truck guys a chance to shuffle out and be you know, a little more calm. And of course, this year we're talking about how they've been more calm. So I guarantee you now we're going to all wreck. How they consistently wreck, and they ended up being super calm. So we'll see how that ends up happening.
Well, I think another factor is the field's a lot more experienced this year. I mean, even the younger guys, this is their second or third year in the truck series. There's only a handful of rookies, you know, Lane Riggs, a rookie, Connor Jones, Thad Moffitt. But that's it as far as like designated rookies in the truck series right now. So the whole field has more experience all the way from top to bottom, it seems. I mean, you know, you look just right at the top there, Corey Heim, young gun, but already well experienced. Raja Karuth has already been running for multiple years. Nick Sanchez, these guys have more than a year of experience under their belt. And I think that's also contributed to some of the cleanliness.
Yeah, for sure. And honestly, I don't know this is a fact because I haven't seen the entry list yet. I'm pretty sure we're the least experienced. I am the least experienced driver in that field come Friday. I don't think there's anybody with less than 5 starts in the field besides me, which obviously this will be number 6. So it's not 5 or less anymore, but I don't think there's anybody that far. Cause even like Elaine Riggs, who only did a few starts last year, he's been full-time all of this year, which is, you know, 4 or 5 races already. So he passed us. And you know, I think it's just a matter of figuring that out as fast as these guys do and making sure that we can kind of keep the nose on it.
Yeah. We mentioned, you know, last year we did this, you know, the Purple Stacking Denny's at Martinsville and a lot of our listeners and our friends, you know, helped contribute toward this. Obviously that door is open once again. You know, Steven can use any help with funding that anybody can help with. How can we get some money to you, Mr. Malazzi?
Yeah, so last year we did names on the cars for anybody who donated. This year, I'm thinking we're going to do a giveaway. Anybody who donates $5 or more to the cause, we're going to offer up a free piece of Stephen Malazzi merch. I'd be disappointed if they didn't pick the Stacking Denny's merch, but you can go to my website, StephenMalazziGear.com, and pick out any piece of merch you want, and I will order it for you. We'll pick a winner at random. Everybody over $5 gets an entry. That simple, that easy. Venmo at Stephen Malazzi, StephenMallozzi, and we will get that rocking and figured out. I think that's a great way to kind of, you know, pay the people back who have been so supportive of me. And it's a little shorter notice this year on the thing, which is why I don't think we can get names on the car. But for sure, I'm going to find a way to make it worth everyone's while. Obviously, you know, like I said, I can't thank everyone enough who did this last time out. And hopefully this time out, we get the same kind of thing, because that would certainly get us over what our goal is and, you know, make it so that we can go out there and give the best effort we possibly can.
And Jordan, I'm sure you'll be able to get that Venmo in the YouTube or podcast descriptions, all that stuff. So if you're listening on any of the podcast platforms or watching on YouTube, you'll be able to access the Venmo link to get some money to help our guy out. And, you know, I've got these wonderful hero cards as well. I think we can add one of them to the auction pool as well. We'll ship one of those out, because I got this personal one here that Malazzi signed to me, but I got a backup that we can send out as well. So
I keep these in my car. I keep these in my apartment. They're in the RBR hauler. And I got a few of these bad boys too. Free Bloomin' Onions. You never know.
Bloomin' Onions. Let's go.
I'll throw, honestly, if people want them, let me put these back real quick.
Oh man.
If people want them, any $5 donor, I will be willing to ship out a hero card and a Bloomin' Onion too.
Oh, I'll see that. I don't even have to raffle mine off then. There we go.
You don't got to raffle it off. Anybody who contributes to the cause is 100% deserving of a free Bloomin' Onion, which, if you donate $5 and you get a $9.99 Bloomin' Onion, that seems like a good way to go.
It seems sure like does.
A financial investment to me. I don't know why at that point you wouldn't.
And and let's be real, if you can donate more than $5, that also helps for sure, because we want to help our guys' racing career out.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely.
I was just, like I said, I'm just trying to make sure that everybody, to me, it's everybody, you know, from top to bottom has contributed. And I, you know, make sure I want to reward those who contribute what they can, irrespective of how much money it is. Right.
Exactly.
And I would say, if you want a hero card and you want a Bloomin' Onion, just in the Venmo, just leave me an address or something, and we'll figure out a way to get that shipped out.
A way to contact, and then, yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'll sign it. If you want me to make it out to you or something, I'll make sure I write, sign it, whatever you want me to say. Leave it all in the Venmo description, you know, and I'll take care of it for you.
Yeah, so whether you want to support Malazzi just as a driver, or, you know, if Nick and I have helped you win any money betting or fantasy wise, hey, here's a good chance to pay it back. Take that, send it to Steven and help him with his racing stuff. We will.
I've had a great March Madness, so I'm making a healthy donation. You haven't sent it yet, but I'm making a healthy donation. Don't worry.
You've had a stupid good March Madness. Yeah, I cannot believe it. I'm pissed at myself for not following it as much as I did. Like, I did your rollover, obviously.
Yeah.
And that was fun. But, man, those props, too.
Well, I don't know if we've ever really talked about this straight up, but Nick Giffen is essentially the reason why I have a NASCAR career to begin with. Because before I was ever a licensed NASCAR employee, one of the way I made a lot of my money to move to Charlotte was through NASCAR DFS. And using some of the advice that I and knowledge that I learned through working with Nick in the Action Network, which is a job that I held for probably 8 months, 9 months at one point, making videos, making content, whatever, I won two $10,000 plus contests at one point.
Nice.
So I really brought home the winnings, and I used all that money to help me move to Charlotte and eventually, you know, pay the bills while I was in the industry too. The thing I miss most about watching NASCAR now that I'm in the industry is actually DFS, because it's not something you can really do anymore.
No.
if you're an insider. But And then obviously, you know, working with Nick led to our little dynamic here that we got going, which kind of spiraled out into something I never thought it could. So can't say thank you enough, Jordan. Sorry, I didn't know you back then, but I know you now, and I love you all. But I think it's always crazy when I think about how much that relationship kind of spiraled into something so much bigger.
It's crazy how things connect and how everything goes.
It is.
But definitely a very cool story there. So, yeah. All that information will be in the description. You guys ready to move on and talk about Richmond for a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Am I ever.
We got some things to talk about. Denny Hamlin in victory lane for the second time this season. A lot of controversy at the end of this race. Top five looking like Denny Hamlin, Joey Logano, Kyle Larson, Martin Truex Jr., who led the most laps in that race and was cruising to victory once again. And we'll get to that in a second. Chase Elliott rounding out the top five, another beneficiary of those late cautions and restarts. But Denny Hamlin in victory lane. Martin Truex Jr. was not happy after that race. You know, Truex has it is his thing to complain, to get mad, especially with slower traffic. He got into it with Larson after the race ended. He went up and bumped his teammate Denny Hamlin after the race ended, say he completely jumped the restart. And that wasn't even the craziest thing of this race. We had a phantom, crazy, stupid NASCAR caution with Kyle Busch going up and slightly scraping the wall and really not doing anything to cause a caution. We had rain tires be used for the first time in a Cup Series race. And then there was a dilemma with NASCAR backing out on their decision to when those tires were changed and the debate whether NASCAR was going to tell them when they could change it or not. But overall, let's start talking about this final restart because I've probably watched this, you know, 100 times. Didn't watch it live because Fox is awful. Holy shit.
Thank God I got to see Justin Haley in 33rd rolling around the corner instead of the restart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had to watch the replays on Twitter. And the more replays I watch, the worse it looks. NASCAR didn't even think about reviewing that restart there after or when it happened or when the race ended. And I think that's part of, you know, I saw a tweet and it was basically saying, you know, Denny Hamlin knew that he had NASCAR in a box, that he could try to get away with it. And chances are they're not going to call it. And they didn't. What I don't like is after the race, they then went and still defended their decision and said that, like, it was fine. It was very clear that he jumped. And why not? And further to that point, if he didn't jump, release the SMT data to show that he didn't.
Yeah.
But NASCAR, once again, is just providing unclear answers and unclear everything and just saying, trust us. Nobody trusts you. And now everyone's pissed. You know, and the thing is, this kind of helped a very boring race. You could not pass in this race unless you had an absolutely super fast car. We saw Josh Berry slice through the field, which is great to see for Stuart Haas Racing. You know, he was a legitimate top five contender, threw it away there in the final couple of pit stops, and missing pit road. Bubba Wallace, again, top five contender, threw it away on the late pit stop. But NASCAR is once again just like, we're walking away with this race or from this race with a black eye on the sport, and I don't like that.
Well, so here's the thing for me, because you and I both have largely praised NASCAR this year for a lot of the decisions they've made, a lot of the good racing we've seen. But yeah, we gotta take them to task on this one because they say they, air quote, reviewed it. But come on, it was clear as day that Denny jumped the start. Like you said, then release the SMT data, release something to show us that that was a good start, because nobody believes that. And then it kind of contributes to this new meta where, okay, NASCAR is willing to swallow the whistle on the final restart. So are people going to start jumping it even sooner? And then when does NASCAR step in? If you have a restart box, then enforce the restart box.
Yes.
Otherwise, you know, it's getting into this balls and strikes stuff that doesn't need to be balls and strikes. It's so very clear. We have SMT data. We could literally automate that call if we wanted. If you see Denny hits the throttle and you have timing and telemetry before if he hits it at a certain percentage or more, you know, because you have to, there's varying amounts you can press it down. But like, if he revs it up sooner than the line, that could be automated. Because you automate pit road already. You automate if a guy falls over and his pinky toe touches the box too soon. You know what I mean? In pit stops.
So, I'll play devil's advocate here. You ready? I got a shocking take on this. I think Denny 110% jumped that start. I do. I don't think there's really a question. I think the restart box is like a crew member outside the box or a car outside the box when you're pitting, right? It's cut and dry. Either you're in the box or you're not in the box. Either you started in the restart zone or you didn't. But think about it this way. In every other sport, in every sport we have, in the clutch of games, the officiating loosens up a little bit, almost largely in every sport we watch, right? It's more of a let them play. You don't want the fourth quarter to be ruined by a BS soft foul call. And honestly, I think NASCAR is in – and I'm not just saying this because I think I've been known to share my opinions on what I think.
Yeah, you have been.
I think NASCAR's in a box because I think if you call Denny Hamlin and it turns out he's 6 inches before the restart zone, everybody's going to be like, man, did that really ruin the race? Like, oh, it's going to be tainted. Oh, what? Yada, yada, yada. Same thing happens if you don't call him, right? I think the defense of it, too, was, while a little bizarre in the way that they went about it, justified, because what are you going to do? You're going to come out after the race and say, we reviewed it, we were probably wrong, nothing we can do about it. I think you got to defend it once you go that deep in the hole.
I don't think you have to. You could just say we were wrong. We see it all the time now. NBA, you know, being like our officials got it wrong or whatever.
Everybody thinks the NBA is the softest league in terms of officiating. No, I hate NBA officiating. There's no – if I had to pick a group of refs to not officiate the game, NBA officials would be my number one.
Get my point. Like, NASCAR could still come out and say, yeah, we got it wrong. We missed it in real time. These are, you know, tight split-second decisions. Then I'd be a lot happier if they did that than defending we got it right, you know.
And obviously Hamlin's not going to come out and say, I jumped it. Because if he does, then that just opens the door for them to take the win away.
He's made that mistake.
Yeah, exactly. He's not gonna.
I know exactly. Yeah.
Potentially, the tweet of the year about this though was Cassie Fambro. She tweeted. Let me find it real quick. Biggest ratings ever for actions detrimental. If you have Denny and Martin Truex Jr. argue, and then Jared reveals the telemetry like he's Maury, and one of them is the father. That was just golden. That was fucking hilarious.
That was good. That was good.
Yeah, I hate it for Truex. I hate that that's how he lost that race. You know, like he dominated the whole thing. And that's
I'm pretty sure I picked Truex to win on this podcast last week, didn't I, Jordan?
Yeah, and I had a 7-1 ticket on Truex sitting. And I was golden.
I had 18-1 on Logano and 8-1 on Larson. So you know, I finished second and third there, and I picked Truex to win. I didn't end up betting a midweek because seven was like. Just short enough, right? I'm like super price sensitive. And I was like, I need probably eight to bet Truex. But I did think he was the car to beat this weekend going into the weekend. So I feel good about all my analysis and stuff, but didn't work out. I'm turning into my colleague PJ Walsh and finishing second and third of the week with my bets. And somehow PJ Walsh ended up betting Denny Hamlin and winning. So he's turning into me, I guess.
Well, you gotta talk about it. Denny Hamlin 3-for-3 now on short tracks this year, right? I mean, that's... He won the Clash. He won.
That's a good point.
So he is not. He is yet. And like, I'll be honest with you. Denny Hamlin was definitely a top five car most of the day yesterday.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
He wasn't a bet. It's not like a terrible. It's not like a. If like Chase Elliott had won that race, I'd be like, damn, that was.
I think there were six top five cars yesterday. There was Truex, Larson, Hamlin, Bubba, Logano, and Barry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Josh there are six top five cars, right? Yeah. Any of them could have finished top five, and we've been like, they had a top five car.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely, I mean, so I'm not like opposed to Denny winning, but Denny always on these short tracks, man, he's always up there and he always finds a way to put himself either in contention for the win or finds a way to freaking win him, whether it's jumping a restart or just flat out dominance, you know, he does it.
And I will note, you know, I'm not fully taking away this win from Hamlin. Obviously, I'm a little irritated about it because I did bet Truex, and that was like a $600 swing for me right there. So that was just irritating, just from that. But the fact of the matter is, Denny Hamlin was in position because his pit crew got him there, and
absolutely,
and they executed. And Truex should be also equally as pissed at his pit crew, because that's not the only time that he lost time. He lost, what, a full second, 0.8 seconds on the green flag pit stop. Luckily enough, he was able to get by Larson quickly on that restart.
That was wild. But, yeah. Larson cut him off, and then Truex just zoomed right past him. That was cool.
Yeah. But, you know,
I was going to say, just to your point, look at the last pit stop times. Denny Hamlin's crew, 9.0. Truex, 10.3. Logano, 10.3. That was the difference right there. That's what allowed Denny to control that last restart, even if he controlled it early.
Yeah. If Truex's pit crew do their job, he gets out first, he controls the restart, he probably wins that race.
Or even Logano's crew, right?
Yeah.
If Logano's crew, which it goes 9-0, then you know he's controlling the start.
I need to shout out these sports books for giving us Logano top 10 plus 120. You know, that was one thing that I was just all over on at Richmond last week during our show, Nick. And I, you know, thank you. Please do it again for Martinsville, please.
And I need to, my whine about it will be chastising the sports books. So don't worry.
Oh, damn it.
I mean, I can whine about it right now, because that was my next point. If we want to jump right
in. Go for it.
Let's go.
Lubabello whined about it. Best wine in the business. Look at that.
That's
purple rain. Love that stuff. I got a nice couple of boxes of wine.
After you get your top 25, you'll have to have a victory, Lubabello.
Oh, yes. Baby. I have to bring one. I have them all at my New Jersey house. I don't really have any alcohol in my apartment because, law school and drinking don't really find that well.
No, they don't.
But my whine about it is 110% the phantom caution. I mean, what if we were to complain about officiating? I'm not complaining about the restart, because there's so many justifying factors to the restart. Late in the game, Denny won the pit stop anyway. If you really want to complain about it, Truex should have had a better pit crew there. Like, we've seen 8 second stops this season. A 10-3 is borderline unacceptable, right? Like in that late of a race, especially when I think Ty Gibbs had an 8-8-1 last week or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, you can whine about it all you want. That's not what I'm complaining about. I'm going to complain about two things, and I hope I'm not taking one of yours. One of which is the decision to count caution laps during stage one after switching from wet to slicks, because that is such an easy fix. I don't understand what the hell we were doing. We wasted literally between those laps, between 25 and 30 laps of caution, just screwing around with the wet to slicks switch. And I think good on NASCAR for figuring it out and getting that race going, right? That's awesome. Let's get the start times going so we don't lose viewers who tune out once they see rain delay. Let's get stuff rolling. It was great racing. That was the best racing we saw all night long for those 30 laps, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. And kudos to the drivers, both in the Truck Series for their rain racing and the Cup Series for their rain racing on ovals. Those are the only two times I think we've seen it on ovals in points paying races. And that's, everybody's been great on rain tires. I'm all for it. I'm going to devil's advocate a little bit, just like you did with ours.
Okay.
This isn't really a precedent that's been set. And it's hard for NASCAR to know what the right thing to do is, because if they decide, well, we need to wait to dry pit road, then the race is delayed another hour, and people are complaining. But then why do you have rain tires if you know you're not going to use them and you're waiting to dry pit road? And then they fire off on the race and then realize pit road isn't dry enough to safely do pit stops, because we don't have data on the NASCAR Cup Series coming down pit road at speed in a wet pit road situation to know if that's going to be a safe thing. So NASCAR is a little bit in a box. That's where I'm playing a little devil's advocate.
And let me tell you, I would totally agree with you if there weren't so much indecision at the top. Like, because if you remember, at first, the first thing we heard on NASCAR's official radio was they are going to not count these laps, and we're going to do non-competitive pit stops to not count them. Then it's we're going to roll under caution, try and drive pit road, and then decide. And then it was we're going to not only count these laps, but we're going to have competitive stops. I would have been fine if they, any way they wanted to, if they had made a decision instead of making it so that, like, for me, that just, I don't want to complain about it too much, because this is my like 1B whine about it. This is not my 1A whine about it.
Sure.
This is like my 1B moment. And I totally agree that that's a box. And the most important thing is safety. But if you really wanted safety, just say you're going to red flag it. You're going to do non-competitive pit stops. And then when you return to the pace laps, you're going to send the drying team out there for those 6 or 7 laps to hopefully dry pit road.
Yeah.
Right? You didn't need to waste. It was literally.
It's tough, though. I mean, it is, in no pun intended, it's a fluid situation where, you know, you don't quite know. And we've seen this in other racing series. Sometimes with the weather and the way things play out, you don't know. And you just kind of have to make decisions on the fly. And making decisions on the fly is not the easiest thing in the world, especially when you haven't done it before.
Yeah.
Hold on.
I do think overall, though, the fact that the rain tires worked and everything was an overall positive, and I think this was a great example of that. Even there's going to be hiccups, you know, and
yes,
but the fact that they worked, the fact that they put on a good show, I think was very good.
Now hold on, let me get to my 1A real quick. I had to answer that was about the scheme coming out in about an hour. Nice. So I wanted to make sure I got that taken care of.
Yes, sir.
1A by far. Okay, and I have evidence to back this up because I thought about when this had happened another time in NASCAR where we had a moment where there was a potential caution during pit cycles at a track with high tire wear where NASCAR literally did not call it until everyone completed their pit cycle. And that was when, I think it was Vegas, a tire was hit and rolled out into the center of the racetrack.
That was Kansas.
Kansas, and it just sat there.
Yeah.
For laps.
Yep.
And Buescher stayed out hoping to catch the caution.
Oh, and Jordan and I were so mad about that.
They went into Buescher pit to call the caution. So we know NASCAR has the knowledge and thinks about this stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what they saw that made that a reasonable caution to call right in the middle of pit cycles. I am doubly upset about it because if you know me and you know my history, and I'm curious to see if you know, do you guys know who I'm a Cup Series fan of?
Kyle Busch.
Kyle Busch.
No. Wow.
Damn, I have no idea. We had no idea. Guess
that? It's been Michael McDowell. And it's been Michael McDowell since Tony Stewart retired. I think he finished 9th or something in the 59 car in Tony Stewart's last race. I'm like, well, I don't know who the hell this guy is. I'll root for him. So I've been a Michael McDowell fan ever since.
Does Michael McDowell know this?
Yeah, I got a picture with him. My first ever NASCAR garage race. I had his Daytona 500 phone case. I also, part of the money I used to move to Charlotte was my dad and I told my dad to bet on Michael McDowell during the 500, the year that he won it, plus 10,000.
Yeah.
And we made 10,000 off of it. My dad and I put it down the middle. And that was also that part combined with the DFS winnings is what I used to move to North Carolina.
Sorry about that sidebar.
Sorry, I told McDowell that whole story. Anyways, McDowell had – I especially was frustrated because McDowell had just pit to try and early pit everyone and ended up 2 laps down.
Yeah.
And I was really upset by it because had the strategy played out, he might have gotten close to being the lucky dog. Instead, he had to take the wave around and ended up on a lap and a half, 2-lap older tires than everybody else and got trapped lap down the rest of the race and caught that phantom caution, which really doubly upset me. But either way, I don't know at a track like Richmond, unless if there is a clearly dangerous accident, which wrecking into the wall high in Richmond in one of the corners is not, because nobody is up that high.
Not right.
Why you ever throw that caution? I mean, he continued the race with no problem. He finished on the lead lap.
And they said NASCAR's response was they thought he might have had a tire go down or that his brakes failed. Which I understand, but they threw the caution when he hit the wall. They didn't. It wasn't after he hit the wall. Like, that was a complete bullshit caution. And we've seen this at Richmond before. I'm pretty sure Richmond was where that brake smoke caution was.
The brake smoke caution.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We have seen them do this at Richmond before. So I'm starting to think there's just something with Richmond. Because it goes.
You know what it is? It's green flag runs. They get a long green flag run and they're like, it's time for a caution. Get a little itchy there.
And it's once again the inconsistency of NASCAR. Like we see this all the time. Do you wait forever? Or do you? And they can't really win. They're not going to win either way until they start being more consistent. And even then, they're not probably going to win. But just get some more consistency out there. I didn't see that caution live. I had to go back and watch it this morning. And I was like, yeah, there is no reason why that caution should have came out other than they were trying to conjure up entertainment.
Zero. And honestly, Richmond is one of those races alongside road courses where I would make the argument it's probably a better race without stage cautions. The only appeal to Richmond is the fact that the strategy is so intriguing that you might get a good race out of it. right? That's what happens at Richmond. When you threw that phantom caution, everyone became afraid to run an alternate strategy. So they all pit when the second the first person pit, it was within 2, 3, 4 laps. Everyone else was in, except for maybe Christopher Bell tried to wait another 15 and then got
and then he sped.
So we did not see a single alternate strategy after that. And you kind of killed the appeal of Richmond.
Yeah.
And I saw a tweet from Gluck, and by the way, the percentage of was this a good race is as of right now, it's 51% yes, 49% no,
which is higher than last week.
Yeah, which is crazy, because outside of the everything in the middle of that race, I think doesn't deserve it to be called a good race. But as far as Gluck retweeted, I think his colleague at the Athletic wrote it.
I know exactly where you're going.
Does Richmond deserve two races? And I'm kind of conflicted. I don't think a lot of tracks deserve two races, if we're being honest.
I agree.
But like you said, Richmond
does.
Okay. I love Pocono.
Pocono deserves a Jordan Saturday, knows it's Sunday a running joke header. On here. Yeah. Yeah. But I don't think Richmond deserves it. As much as I like tire fall off, I like to see, you know, actual driving. These races at Richmond are not very good.
What's interesting about Richmond? It is a really good racetrack when it's between the extremes of tire wear. When it was repaved and the sealant and all that stuff, and it was like brand new, you couldn't pass.
Mm-hmm.
And now that it's super old and we got this next gen car that has struggled at short tracks, it's pretty hard to pass. Ends up being a boring race. But when it was in that middle age, when it was in its middle ages, it's fine wine, not its old wine, not its brand new wine. It was an amazing racetrack. So maybe it's time for a Richmond repave and a little bit of that, you know, 5-year curation thing that they've tried to do on some of these tracks recently.
I remember when I was younger, like 2015, 2013, like really younger, that a lot of the races I would tune into, and correct me if I'm wrong, was the race before the regular season ended was Richmond.
Yep.
That was the playoff. Yep. That was the cutoff for the
chips. That was the Clint Bowyer itchy arm thing.
Yes. something dramatic always happened. I remember one year there was a huge wreck involving a potential – was it new? It might have been Newman when he was like 17th in the cutoff and he needed to get in. And he needed to put, and he was in a huge wreck, I think, and with Tony Stewart. Am I making that up or – I don't think I have. It happened. And every race had something dramatic happen in it. And it was always something, you know, kind of interesting. And maybe I'm remembering it nostalgically, but I always felt like it was better than the product that we've been seeing at Richmond. And I don't know what, at this point, we're seeing in Richmond to give it a second date.
Remember when Jeremy Mayfield in 2004 won? He had to win to get in, and he won. Like, Richmond produced some of these just incredible playoff cutoff races. And again, that was right around its, you know, it's 2004 was a little on the early side, but its middle age was when it raced the best.
Yeah, I was 3 in 2004. I don't remember.
Oh, God. I was 21. I'm old as shit.
I was 14.
You're essentially, Nick, as old as I am now, maybe a couple of years younger in 2004 when Jeremy Mayfield won.
Actually, let me look up the date of that race. I need to look up the date of that race. That may have been like right at my 21st birthday. I'm not even joking. Okay. September 11th. September 11th, 2004. Ooh. So 3-year anniversary of September 11th. That was a month and a half before I turned 21.
Wow. I would have been 3 years, 7 months and 26 days old at that point. So yeah, good times. Remember it like it was yesterday.
All right. What about any other wine about it's we got here, Jordan?
You have something in mind. I don't have a lot to whine about.
I wanted to live bet Denny Hamlin, and guess what? I couldn't. You know why? Because books were only offering Truex, Logano, and Larson. What the fuck?
Yep.
How? What? I was trying to live bet Denny Hamlin anywhere I could, and the only book that had it was Bet365, and I don't have access to that book in real time. So What are you gonna do?
I didn't even know that 365 did live. I've never seen mm-hmm. live on there.
Yeah, they had Denny at, I think it was like 7.5 to 1 when I was trying to live, like find anywhere live. I think it was 15 to 1. Then it moved down to 9. Then it moved down to 7.5. And I'm sitting here like, oh my god, I wish I could get down on this, because everywhere else, FanDuel, DraftKings, BetMGM did not have it. Caesars had Denny Hamlin, but they had him at like 2 or 3 to 1. And so kudos to Caesars. Kudos to Bet365, but nowhere else had live betting other than the top three cars, and that makes no sense. What are we doing with the live betting? ESPN Bet had just the top three. Like, this is asinine. You should be able to bet the whole field if you want, the whole race, until you cut off live betting. That's my line about it. That's where I was chastising the sports books and what I was going to say.
Should I play double advocate for Nick's one?
No, you should not, because this is BS.
So let me tell you. Let me. First off, I don't follow it as closely as I used to, but a lot of my Twitter feed is still this stuff, because I only follow a couple hundred people, and 25 of them are NASCAR gambling people. Just for because that's the community I'm involved in.
Sure.
The holds have gotten utterly insane for NASCAR. Like, it's there's no value left in it anymore. Sometimes it's really hard to find. You have to search, you have to scavenge books to find the right, like, different. It used to be like, back when it first started, you used to be able to find it on any book. You could pretty much find some type of edge if you were really a sharp guy. Mm. Now it's like 35-40% hold sometimes, and I'm like, holy shit.
No, it's not. People have been miscalculating the hold. I will say, FanDuel had a 35% when they screwed up the Daytona 500 and had to cancel all the tickets. And then since they had no handle, after they had to cancel all the tickets because the race moved less, like just over 24 hours later, they threw out an insane hold. But most places have been 33% hold or less. BetMGM this year has been great as far as outrights, 25% hold. Circa, 25% hold, and they even got it down towards 20 and a little bit below 20% for the Daytona 500, but typically around 25%. Superbook, Westgate Superbook originates it, and then Superbook is affiliated with it, that goes out to the other states. They're typically around 25% when all is said and done. So it's only in rare situations that we creep above around 33% these days. But I will say, I agree with you, in the non-outright markets, like top 10s, that is where it gets crazy, especially in a book like Caesars. They're holding ridiculous amounts on the top 10 markets.
Yeah. But that wasn't my counter to your point. My counter to your point was going to be, when it comes to racing is not like other sports, right? Like, in football, if you're up by 21, it's really hard to make up that 21. So it's easy to offer odds on the two teams that are playing. When there are 36 competitors, 20 of whom can realistically win certain races at any given time, it's a lot more challenging. Think about it this way. Martin Truex led 250 laps, was the car to beat all night long, pretty much essentially the entire time. One caution changed everything. So for book staff to offer odds on these kinds of people, it's really difficult game.
But then figure it out. Because last year you were offering it. Why can't you this year?
Probably because they lost so much money on it.
Then figure it out. Don't make Martin Truex Jr. minus 200. Make him plus 150, and then you can shorten all the other guys. It's a figural outable problem. They're just not willing to do it. So instead, they take everybody off.
I'm just saying, if I had that job and were an odds maker and had to make live odds for NASCAR races, that would be my fucking nightmare. Excuse my language. I would absolutely despise that job. Because that's a hard freaking gig. What if you had asked me to make live odds for Hamlin with 50 to go, right? What would you price him at? Because for me, if Truex has got an 8 second lead on Hamlin, 9 second lead, has been the dominant car, and Hamlin's in sixth or seventh place,
caution can always come out.
You at Richmond? Do you know that? Do you?
I didn't say it's likely. I just said it can.
Listen, all I'm
saying, and even Larry Mack on the TV was like, well, here's the trance. Caution tends to come with around 16 laps to go. You know what I mean? I love Larry Mack. We get cautions late at Richmond sometimes. That's how Alex Bowman won the Richmond race a couple years ago. Late caution with restart with 10 to go.
Listen, I'm not denying I would I would have loved back in my day to have consistent live betting odds. I don't, like I said, it doesn't impact my life anymore. I understand why you're frustrated. Sure. All I'm saying is, if I had that gig, it's no different than from your perspective, right? When you see Caesars offer those absolutely garbage top 10 odds, how do you prevent that? You just don't bet them, right? That's what you do. If DraftKings and FanDuel and all these other books were losing money on live bets, their way to stop that?
I'm not saying you even have to offer good odds. I'm just saying offer it.
Interesting. Okay, I don't have an argument for that.
Yeah. I'm not mad at Caesars for offering it at 3-1 when Bet365 had it at 15-1. I'm not mad at Caesars. I'm mad at the books that didn't offer it.
You know what? You're right then.
When they would last year.
Yeah.
That's all.
They do have a tendency when it gets to like the final 20 laps that they take them off. I've noticed that a lot. Like when it gets to the very end stage off. Yeah. They'll take everything off. Yeah. And they did. They only kept Truex, Logano, and I forget who, Larson. Up there.
And I'm like, but you got to be able to bet Denny Hamlin. And one other thing, I made a mistake when I said there were 6 top 5 cars. There were 7. Christopher Bell had a top 5 car.
Christopher Bell did too. Yep. I will note, you know, maybe this is my whine about myself. I did bet Hamlin live just to save my ass when he was catching Truex, like, when Truex was behind Chastain and couldn't pass Chastain, which, by the way, then Chastain just let Hamlin or Logano just go on by. Fuck him. Anyway, when he was catching Truex like that with Hamlin coming, I did bet him, but it was like +150. And that was just a pure, like, in my brain. I know it was an awful bet. Like, I know this was negative EV by a wide margin. But in my brain, it was, how is Truex going to fuck this up? Or how is this going to get fucked up for Truex that I'm going to lose my early week bet? So I got to bet Hamlin because that's the most likely outcome. And so that kind of, you know, just helped a little bit. But I think it's funny, you know, you mentioned top 10 odds and top 10, like the hold is awful on them. I don't know what that says about the fact that those are my bread and butter. And they have been for like the last 30 races. Like that's where I've made my most money. Similar to where Nick, you used to make all your money on head to heads.
Yeah.
Top tens are where I have just completely crushed it over the last, you know, however many races. And that's what made me the most money this past weekend.
It's for me these days, and unfortunately it's only offered at Caesars, but back in the day, Westgate for every race would offer over under finishing positions. And I've just cleaned those up, and it's not as prevalent, but If all the books start getting back in over under finishing positions, that is such a ripe market. And I'm kudos to Caesars for offering those.
Caesars is doing it. Superbook does like once or twice.
Which is Westgate. Yeah, but Westgate used to do that for every race. And Stations Casinos in Nevada used to do that for most races. But head to heads and the over under finishing positions were just amazing. I just want them to offer it live, and then I'm with you as far as the top tens. You're crushing it, even though the hold has been higher. The nice thing is, it is a single book hold. You can get what we call a synthetic hold by shopping around, and we can get some pretty reasonable synthetic holds, right? If the 365 offers a really good line and Caesars isn't, but then Caesars offers a really good line on somebody else, and then DraftKings offers a really good line on somebody else, you can get that synthetic hold down, which makes it top 10 markets still viable, I think, at this point in time, if you're able to shop around.
Yeah, not to mention like profit boost. So like I used my profit boost this past week to get Logano at +138. I got Byron at +105. And those were my, you know, I had 3 units, I think, on Logano and 2.5 units on Byron. So like they finished great, you know. So yeah, definitely, as always, shop around, find the best lines. And thank you to Luvabella Winery for sponsoring Wine About It in this podcast. Also, the Brew Kettle. I am enjoying a Monocle peanut butter or chocolate peanut butter stout right now. Another one of our sponsors, the Brew Kettle. Make sure that you check both of those out.
I'll switch to Dr. Pepper. It's only noon for me. So,
yeah. Again, special edition of Stacking Denny's this week, announcing Malazzi back in the truck. Speaking of that, we do have Martinsville coming up. It's gonna be a pretty short preview because there's no betting odds out there, but we can talk about this race coming up, the eighth race of the season. Here's one stat for you that, again, it's similar to Richmond last week. Last 7 races at Martinsville, 7 different winners. Mm-hmm. Do we see number 8 this week? It was so the 8 or the 6 different winners are, of course, Martin Truex Jr., Ryan Blaney, Alex Bowman, Christopher Bell, William Byron, Kyle Larson, and Chase Elliott. Those are the 7 different winners over the last 7 Martinsville races. Over the last 6 races, Logano and Blaney have been the best. Top 11 finishes for both of them in every single race. Larson's up there, William Byron. But again, I think Josh Berry's performance and Stuart Haas Racing as a whole's performance at Richmond last week is very noteworthy, because do you remember the first race here at Martinsville last year? Who was fastest? Who led the most laps?
Mm-hmm. It was Ryan Preece.
Yep. And just Stuart Haas Racing overall.
I was watching Chase Kyle Briscoe. Kirkwood win, but I was following along on you know, my phone what was going on in the NASCAR race. I'm like sitting here like, damn, Ryan Preece is leading.
Yeah, Ryan Preece led 135 of the 400 laps. Chase Briscoe led 109 laps of the 400 laps. Briscoe finished 5th. Almirola finished 6th, which, you know, when you look back last year at where Stuart Haas was last year, they weren't good. So the fact that this came out of nowhere, could we see one of those guys actually win this race? And like I said, like, this is Monday. We don't have odds out yet. We cannot give any analysis on any bets. But I'm very interested to see where these Stuart Haas guys open up at.
Yeah, we could see them win. We can. Josh Berry, great at Martinsville, won in the Xfinity Series at Martinsville. Noah Gregson, great at Martinsville. Chase Briscoe, 1 of 3 drivers to finish top 10 at every Martinsville race in the next gen era. And then obviously Ryan Preece leading the most laps in this race last year. One of them can win it. Should they be the favorites? Of course not. But we definitely could see another new winner in terms of like consecutive Martinsville new or different winners, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not the most far-fetched thing in the world, but I think a Toyota wins. I really do. I can't. I know Martinsville is a little different, you know, in its analysis. It has to be. It's such a unique racetrack.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, like, I cannot get over what I'm seeing out of these Toyotas this year. Every single friggin' race, they've just got it down. I mean, at these short tracks and. To me, like, when I first was thinking about who I was going to say I think has got a shot here, I just keep thinking Ty Gibbs.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I just keep thinking Ty Gibbs is going to be.
Every week, though, we're thinking Ty Gibbs right now.
Like, I know, but it's got to happen eventually. He just always has this car. I don't know what happened to him this weekend. He just didn't. He got mired. He got a pit stop penalty after being in right around the top 10 and then never just came up. Was never seen in the top 10 really again the rest of the day. But I don't remember where he qualified here last year, but was it not in the top 5?
So Ty Gibbs last year started 2nd, finished 7th and 6th in the 2 stages, and then finished 18th. I don't remember exactly what happened. I didn't really have time to go back and review everything yet, but
I think if he puts it near the top 5 in qualifying, he'll be a real threat to win. I have no read on this season right now. I can't figure it out. It's everything that happens is just it doesn't make any sense. The next gen car has made it so competitive, and I mean, I always love following the battle for the back of the pack. And the only thing that I've really seen consistently is that it's, and everybody keeps talking about Justin Haley, but in reality, I mean, it's Rick Ware Racing, Colleg, and Harrison Burton that have all been at the back all season long. Mm-hmm. Those have been
Daniel Hamrick trophy hunting. Yep. Trophy hunting for that last place finish.
That has been the only thing that's been consistent, like, for me, that I can really tell. Everybody else has been pretty jumbled up. Slight edge to Hendrick and slight edge to the Toyotas with the speed. But at the end of the day, I think Martinsville could be anyone's game. I don't know what to expect either in terms of whether or not we see an improved short track package. Richmond does not give me a lot of faith. It has not given me a lot of belief that we're going to see any significant form of tire fall off whatsoever, which leads me to believe it could end up being a track position race and we could see someone steal it.
Which we
will say,
and time again,
this is getting into
this car.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a little, you mentioned all the back markers here. The one we haven't mentioned, which I think is a little surprising, of the 35 full time drivers, right? Because that 15 car isn't full time drivers, they've been bouncing around. Zane Smith is last in points right now. Yeah. And then it's Harrison Burton, Kaz Gralla, Justin Haley. You have Priest and Gregson, but they both got those 25, 35, 30, somewhere in their point penalties. And then it's Daniel Hemric. So you're exactly right. It's the colleague car, the wear cars, and then Zane Smith and Harrison Burton. And I should say 34 full-time drivers in chartered. Kaz Gralla has been full-time in a combination of cars. He didn't race that first race with Rick Ware Racing, he has raced the full season so far. But the idea remains the same. It's the colleague guys. Obviously AJ Allmendinger has taken the colleague car to 2 sixth place finishes, although one was in the 13 at COTA. But again, that's a Daytona 500 and a COTA race. Outside of that, colleague has not been super fast as a whole, as a team there. So definitely right about that. But I just wanted to throw in Zane Smith in there as well, because he's struggled this year. He's a great driver, but he has definitely struggled so far in his rookie season.
But I would go as far as to say, and I've obviously kept tabs on Zane because I've interacted with Zane a few times. He's a super nice guy. Always very down to earth, very helpful. Talked to me a lot of Bristol. We had a nice conversation about what Bristol's like. But a lot of his stuff has been mistakes of bad luck. I don't know if the car is as slow as the point standings have him.
Oh, I agree with you.
Any better than a bottom 10 car?
I bet him for a top 10 finish at Vegas. And, you know, he looked like he was going to have a really good car. And unfortunately, really on lap four, which is exactly what Jordan predicted, that something would go wrong on lap four. Not that Zane Smith would hit the wall, but something would go wrong with his bets or DFS lineups on lap four. And it was exactly lap four.
Wow. Yep. Wow. What a prediction, Jordan.
I walked into work and I tweeted out. I was like, feeling really good about my DFS plays. Like, they were great outside of that, but I was so heavy on Zane Smith, and I was like, it's probably going to go to shit on lap four. And I'm sitting there watching the race, lap four, Zane Smith into the wall. I'm like, you've got to be fucking kidding me. Like,
yeah.
God.
I will say this. We're previewing all of Martinsville and not just the Cup Series. I really like a Toyota to win in Xfinity. I do. I think a Toyota wins in Xfinity, and I'm much more confident about that prediction. But trucks, I have no idea. I also have – I don't know what to tell you. Like, I would – my always when people ask me who I think is going to win a truck race, my immediate answer is almost always Corey Heim, just because I think he is, like, one of the most talented drivers I have ever – I think he's phenomenal. Like, I'm not trying to meat ride one of my competitors.
Sure.
I just think that he's a pretty unbelievable driver. Yeah. But obviously, you know, the truck series, anything kind of happened. And I just think he's a combination of one of the best trucks in the field and probably the best driver in the field. You could always go with Majeski. He's a short track ace. Always finds a way to get his way to the front in these types of places.
I will say, you know, so Jordan, you brought up, can we get a new winner, right? And so we're talking about these Stewart Haas cars. But we're also talking about Toyota and, I mean, Truex, Bell, Hamlin, Ty Gibbs. They're all great at Martinsville. They all could win. Then you've got, you know, guys like Byron, who have always done great here in the Chevys. Bowman has won here. Larson's getting a lot better here at Martinsville. Been really good recently. Then you've got Ryan Blaney, Joey Logano, who are always good here. Brad Keselowski is always good here. Like, what a field we have for Martinsville.
Oh, yeah.
This is a stacked Cup field for Martinsville. Yeah. And I mean, it's a stacked Cup field every week, but it's specifically at Martinsville, there's 15 drivers that could win this race.
Yeah.
So I mentioned the seven that have won the last seven races. You look who's not on that list. Joey Logano is not on that list. Denny Hamlin is not on that list.
Wow.
Ross Chastain, Bubba Wallace, he's always been good at Martinsville, getting better here in Cup. Kyle Busch. Not on that list. Ty Gibbs, not on that list. Why can't I pronounce list right now? I think chances are we're going to get an eighth different winner in eight races here at Martinsville, which says a lot, because there was a period of time where the same two or three guys were winning every single Martinsville race. You know, you remember back to when Jeff Gordon, Jimmy Johnson, they won like everything. And so it's nice to see differences. You know, Hamlin's obviously a five-time winner here, Truex, three-time winner here, Keselowski, as you mentioned, two-time winner here. So, and we didn't even mention Buescher. Like, that team's running extremely well this year. You never know when that win's coming for them. So I can't wait to see how how this weekend plays out and what the Martinsville race goes like. One thing to note, though, and we saw it this last weekend with Richmond, where we had morning practice and then a night race. It's the opposite this week with Martinsville. We're doing practice and qualifying at night on Saturday, followed by a quick turnaround to a Sunday afternoon race. We saw how awful the race was a couple years ago when it was cold and it was night. Do we have to discount practice this weekend? Especially because I'm pretty sure, I'll have to pull up the weather forecast again, but I'm pretty sure it's supposed to get like 33 degrees on Friday night and then just slowly get, Friday night's going to be 33 degrees. It's going to be cold as shit. I'm packing my winter coat for this race. It's supposed to get warmer as the weekend goes on, but obviously, you know, you're practicing at night and then all of a sudden you're racing during the day. That could throw us off with practice data and everything, but like we said, I think track position is going to be just massive here, as we've seen with this next gen car at this track.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed a lot that Toyotas always seem to slack a little in practice, and they always find a way to have great long run speed. It's every freaking every time I see Toyotas universally be terrible, and like they're like 18th or 19th, they always end up being quick in the race with their long run speed. So I'm never worried about them. And like we saw this weekend, they were terrible in the day. Like they didn't have good long run speed. They were all, I think they were like 22nd, 24th, 27th type range. Yeah. And they were all the fastest long run cars. All of them pretty much were great in the long run. So you said maybe 10 or 15 different winners. I just counted. I was doing that on my fingers while you guys were talking.
I was wondering what you were doing.
I counted 20 people that I could see winning. Sure. And I did not put Kyle Busch on that list. I don't think RCR has any shot at winning on a short track. They just don't. I mean, I've heard Kyle's radio this year. It's been pretty dramatic about how
they do seem a little behind. I definitely agree with that. And like, you know, Austin Dillon had a lot of bad luck to start the year. There's no doubt about that. That a lot of what happened to him early on was just troubles in like the beginning of every race, it seemed like. But past couple races, just no speed out of that three car as well.
None. So.
Looking at the forecast, it's supposed to cold at night, but then get a little bit warmer.
To your point, Jordan, going back to practice, like you said, is it going to be tough to use? I do think it'll be tough to use. And if you use practice this week, you probably, again, to what Malazzi said, you probably didn't have a great week. I tried to use practice, but not overuse it. You know what I mean? Because I still liked Truex, still liked Hamlin. I didn't think I wanted to bet him at 7-1 to win, but kudos to PJ Walsh for that. But one guy that I think some people were fooled by was Ryan Blaney, right? He goes out, throws a bunch of good lap times in practice, and everybody's like, oh, all of a sudden, oh, are we forgetting about Ryan Blaney? He looked good in practice and just garbage in the race.
You tweeted it out and I updated it. You know, you and I have long been on we're waiting for Ryan Blaney to beat us at Richmond. He sucks at this racetrack. He's 0-16 at beating us at Richmond. And I'm going to stay on that train until he does beat me. The easiest bet
like
I made
a driver this weekend, Tyler Reddick at Martinsville. I'm waiting for him to beat me, right? We always say this at Martinsville. To be good at Martinsville, first you have to be, or to be win at Martinsville, first you have to be good at Martinsville.
Yeah. And Tyler Reddick isn't. He's shown a little bit of flash here last year, started sixth though. And if he qualifies well, he might be able to do it. Ended up finishing 22nd. Track position, though, you know, if you qualify well, you're probably going to have a good race in Martinsville. But, you know, the easiest bets I made at Richmond were immediately Chris Buescher over Blaney and Joey Logano over Blaney. Yep. Because Blaney's not good here. And then, you know, it just got worse when he did, once again, like he always does, is lay down awesome practice speeds. He's just not good there. Like, I don't know what we can do. If there's anything that people can learn from this podcast – Ryan Blaney is not good at Richmond, and you know, it's just the only time. So that one of my head-to-head bets was Logano over Blaney. Logano is now 15-1 versus Blaney at Martinsville head-to-head. The only time that he did not finish better at Richmond. Sorry, the only time that he did not beat him head-to-head was the race that Logano wrecked out. That was the only race. So, oh man, yeah. Eventually, maybe people will get it, but
Blaney wins next Richmond race. Calling it now.
That'd be
God.
Very early. Early pick to win. Malazzi has Blaney next Richmond race.
Blaney to win Richmond in the playoffs. Yeah, the Tyler Reddick thing, though, is totally true. And when I was going through my weird finger counting thing, I actually did not count either of the 2311 cars. And that's because with track position being so important, I don't trust their pit crews to win. That is such whoever qualifies on pole is going to have a couple of massive advantages this week. And that's obviously track position, right, to get going. But also you're going to have the best pit stall, which is really important at the because it's got the freaking curve at Martinsville on the pit entrance and exit, so you could really just shoot straight off quick. Yeah. And like I said, I mean, getting your crew having good stops all day long is probably going to be a large, much larger percentage than at other tracks, almost as large as it was at Richmond, maybe bigger. I don't know. It depends on how the race actually ends up playing out. It's going to be as important as it was in Richmond to make sure you have these really good stops that get you that track position coming out. So like crews like the 5 car, crews like the 11 car, although Hamlin has some issues speeding. He loves to speed. He does it a lot. He can't really afford that at Martinsville. Yeah. You know, the teams that get their cars on and off pit road quick are going to have, you know, good days. And I think every single race, I don't remember a race that I've watched since 2311's inception where one of the 2311 teams has not had an absolute disaster on pit road at one stop during the race.
Yeah. Sure feels like it.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah. It does. It's crazy. So,
but you know, speaking of picks to win, as we just mentioned, Malazzi, you have Blaney next Richmond race, but we need to get to our picks to win here for Martinsville. Shit, just a second here. Last weekend, I finally got into victory lane on this show. It's been a while. Started off the season. Nick, both you and I have started off extremely strong with our picks to win this year. I now have 5 straight picks finishing 6th or better from this show. Got the win with Hamlin last weekend. You have one finish outside of the top 10 this entire season so far. You had Truex last week finishing 4th.
Robbed.
Again, this is yeah, exactly. This is a very early pick. We have not, like, I've barely looked at anything for Martinsville. You know, impromptu, you know, we just planned this show literally 4 hours ago. Yeah. So
quite
very early here picks to win. Steven, I'm going to let you go first for your pick to win Martinsville this weekend. You said you love the Toyotas. Who's going to be your Toyota in victory lane?
God, now that you say that, I'm going to Martinsville. I'm racing in Martinsville. I find it tough. You know what? I'm going to go with my gut here. Give me the 22, okay? I love the 22.
I'm gonna nice. Think,
I love the Toyotas, but at the end of the day, Ford's, you know, Ford Performance, the crew,
I like that.
The number, it's 22. We got to rock and roll with it. I'll take Logano. I think he finally gets in victory lane. You said it. He's always good here. Penske's always good here. Actually, I remember this distinctly. One of the contests that I won that we talked about earlier that I won that money on was an all Penske lineup in DFS the year that they dominated Martinsville. They were like 1-2-4, I think. And I did that. And I think Logano finally breaks this winless streak. It's been, I think it's been a full, has it been a full season in Atlanta last year, right? It's been a
Something
long
time. Like
it's been a long streak for Logano since he's won. He had a great showing at Richmond. I think he might get it done again on Sunday. Give me Logano. 22, baby.
You're right. His last win was Atlanta last year, race number 5. So it's been over a full season. I like that pick. I like it a lot. Like you said, Toyotas are going to be strong. And you know what? It's my turn to go first between Nick and I. And we've never had us pick the same driver, but I'm gonna somehow break that because I'm going Logano too. I really like what I saw out of that car out of Richmond. That for how strong they came out at Richmond, I think him and Blaney are gonna be really good here at Martinsville. I'm going.
I had
Logano
one name
well.
In mind. I had one name in mind, and it's a clean sweep.
Corey LaJoy.
No, oh yeah, of course, Corey LaJoy. It is a clean sweep of Team Penske. I'm going Ryan Blaney.
Yep, I like that.
That was the only name I had in mind. I was like, I'm picking Ryan Blaney for this, and if you guys pick it, I'm picking it too.
Any of the stats, Blaney's 15-1 against Logano. It's, you know, the only race he's beaten Logano in, the race he wrecked out.
Yeah, oh, that was Richmond. That was Richmond.
Oh, shit. Sorry. Oops.
Yeah, that was Richmond.
But no,
I was also going to pick Stephen Malazzi, but he's not racing in the Cup Series. So,
what's more likely? Okay, what is more likely? Do we think it's more likely that Stephen Malazzi in the Raymond Brothers Racing 22 wins on Friday, or do we think it's more likely that Daniel Hemric in the 31 wins on Sunday? You got to pick one of the. You got to pick one or the other. What do you think is more likely? That's the question.
Honestly, it's got to be Malazzi, just given the potential for chaos in the truck race.
Thank you.
And we should do a calculation the smaller field, but which one finishes better relative to the full field?
Ooh.
And I would put that'd be a head-to-head bet right there. Malazzi versus Hemric relation to the Cup field. Try to equal it out to the same percentage, I guess you would do.
Sure.
Because we don't know how many trucks are going to be
field.
In this race.
Yeah, just do percentage of the field.
I would bet Malazzi. -105 Malazzi.
I think it'd be 33 versus 37. And you got to remember, essentially, it's going to be really tough for Hemric to lose the 66. So he's basically got a 36th place locked up at least.
I will say Hemric is pretty good at Martinsville. Not great, but pretty good at Martinsville.
Oof. Wow. Nick's taking Hemric. Jordan's taking Malazzi.
Yeah. I'm gonna take Hemric and throw up about it.
Put a sad little wager on it. I can't bet on it. I'm involved.
Yeah, between me and Jordan there.
Yeah, do like a little side bet. Loser has to buy a piece of Stacking Denny's merch for the other one. And I'm the loser and ship it to
there
them.
There we go. There we go.
Okay.
Yeah. Our other set of picks, 36 for 36. Nick experienced Jordan week last week in that contest where I finally had a good break. I went with Logano at Richmond. Malazzi, do you know what this game is?
It's where you have to pick each one of the chartered cars of 36 races. You have to try and do the best. Yeah. Yeah,
I so I used Logano last week at Richmond, really paid off, 49 points. Nick had Austin Dillon, 13 points.
I have to use him somewhere.
You had to use him somewhere, and I agreed with that pick 100%. Just sucks that he, wasn't as good as typical there. But we're on to Martinsville, and I get to go first. And, I went with what I considered, one of Logano's best tracks and pretty much a lock. I wanted to get some points last week. Paid off beautifully for me. I think I have to go one of the Stuart Haas guys this week. And I'm just debating now whether I want to go Barry or I want to go Priest. And you know what? I think I'm going Barry.
I would have gone Priest, honestly. I think
I could see it both ways, but a little bit of recency bias just came in there. And I'm going Josh Barry. I really like how that car looked last week. I like Childers here at Martinsville. I'm going Priest. Sorry, Barry over Priest.
Yeah, I just think you'll find more races in my mind where Barry is better than where Priest is good. I think this only I don't know where else I'd play Priest outside of Martinsville. If I'm thinking,
you could be talking. Okay, I'm going Priest. Never mind, changing it.
Oh,
I just really persuaded you. I think about all the places. You did. I would play Josh.
I was so on the edge there about and who knows, maybe Josh Barry looks or could be just as good as the next Martinsville race. So yeah, give me Priest or Richmond, sorry.
And even if Barry does well, you're looking for the relative value, and I just think Priest's relative value is high. Let me guess, are you both going to end up playing the call it? Well, you're probably waiting for Amendinger to get behind the wheel for a road course, right? But you're probably playing the Rick Ware and Colleg and Spire cars at super speedways. Is that the kind of thought process there?
That's what I did. I played the 15 at Daytona, and then the 51 at Atlanta.
Interesting. Okay, get him out of the way early.
Yeah, Nick, I played Daniel Hemric at the 500 because where else are you going to use Daniel Hemric? maybe it should have been Martinsville. Yeah, I know. I mean, for me, it's between Priest, maybe Josh Berry, maybe Ryan Blaney, since I haven't used Blaney.
Yeah.
I could certainly see using Blaney at a championship race in Phoenix if he's in the championship four, so I might save him for that. Other than that, guys that are just like Super Dominant at Richmond have other, or sorry, at Martinsville have other good tracks, right? Like if I use, I know Rich, excuse me, Martinsville is a good track for Bubba Wallace, but he's also great at Kansas, Vegas, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't need to use him here. Similar for Truex or some of these other guys. So I'm going to, Jordan and I are going to push this week because I'm going Ryan Preece. So we are on the same car. Whoops. Filling in the wrong thing.
We did the same thing at Vegas this year. We were both on Bowman for Vegas. So
shit, I didn't mean to.
Bowman was like one of our like safe picks. Like we don't know who's going to be fast at Vegas. New bodies. Well, we certainly think Toyota have an advantage, but is Chevy still going to be good? Which Toyota, right? Because we, you know, if Toyota is good, then we'll want to save them for Kansas 2, Vegas 2, Kansas 1, you know, all these other things. So we went Bowman as a nice, like, safe pick at Vegas, a good track for him. That was the first time we were on the same car this year in 36 for 36. Second time this year, Jordan and I are on the same car for 36 for 36 is this week. Ryan Preece at Martinsville.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And we both have Stephen Malazzi for the Truck Series race. So,
yes, sir.
Again, all information will be posted on how you can support Stephen Malazzi this weekend and the 22 Ford. Once we can release what this truck looks like, guys, it looks awesome. It'll
be out pretty shortly.
So satisfied with this truck. So, yeah. Thank you all for tuning in. Stephen Malazzi, thank you for joining this podcast, talking to us about Richmond NASCAR. Good luck this weekend in your race. Come home with that top 25 finish. Beat Daniel Hemric so I can win. And, yeah,
I will.
I'm excited. I can't wait.
That's going to be something fun to keep track of, you know. Over the course.
Yeah.
So practice is Friday, right? And then the race is Saturday. Is that correct? No,
practice and race Friday.
Practice and race Friday. Okay.
Not race on Friday.
Yep. Gotcha. So it's Xfinity that's racing Saturday, but practicing on Friday.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Because I, you know, for me, with my basketball stuff, I'm trying to plan all my basketball content. So I'm trying to triple double check the schedule. And I remembered Saturday morning, I don't have to do anything because I did remember this tidbit that both trucks and Xfinity were practicing on Friday, which means I had Saturday morning free since I didn't have to do DFS projections for Fantasy Labs on Saturday morning. That means I could do a basketball show Saturday morning for the basketball games. And Malazzi, our University of Virginia Cavaliers,
are responsible
for my NC State Wolfpack being in the Final Four.
Do you know how much Nick? I have really. I'm a law student trying to save some money to cover the textbooks and the rent because I don't want to take out any of the loans. So I really toned down the gambling, especially the sports betting. Like I really slowed down on it.
Mm-hmm.
I came back to bet on UVA in the ACC tourney because I was like, I actually like them. I think they got a shot. I think they match up well against a lot of the opponents. I had a solid this is a lot of money for me. I had a solid $100 on Virginia to beat NC State live bet at plus 270. Very excited about that I got him at that price. I'm like, okay. I'm like, all he's going to do is make the free throw. But let me tell you something. If he misses this free throw, I promise you, and I'm sitting next to one of my friends, I promise you we lose this game. And the second I saw him miss, I'm like, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched him run down the court. I'm like, it's over. Watch him chuck up a prayer three. I'm like, it's over.
It goes in.
And of course, it goes in.
Classic UVA. Classic
Virginia.
So, yeah, I was planning out my basketball schedule. So, Friday practice for the Truck Series at 5 Eastern. Qualifying at 5:40. No, that's Xfinity. Start over. 3 o'clock Eastern, practice for the Truck Series. 3:40 Eastern, qualifying. And 7:30 Eastern, the Long John Silver's 200 featuring Stephen Malazzi in the number 22.
I wonder if I show up with Long John Silver's if they'll throw me a few extra dineros. You know what I'm saying? I don't even know where the hell there is a Long John Silver's in Martinsville, but I'm going to find one. I'll be damned if I don't. So anyways, thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate everything you guys do. I said it, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it for the rest of my life. You know, this wouldn't be possible. Thank you to all the people who support Nick and Jordan as well. Obviously, you guys are really the ones who make this doubly possible. And, hopefully we get that top 25 at Martinsville.
Did Jordan freeze?
Jordan froze a little bit there.
I see you guys froze for me. There we go.
Everything got quiet.
Yeah. No. All right. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week talking about Texas. Again, support Stephen Malazzi if you can. We'll get that Venmo information to you. $5 or more, you're going to get entered into a contest to win some free swag. And bet on him because bet like a dollar. Bet like a dollar.
I don't even think I can recommend that.
No, I don't recommend, I don't recommend that, but do it just because it's fun.
I'm gonna get Stephen Malazzi to sign my losing ticket because I actually have to print out my winning ticket for Kyle Kirkwood to sign when I go back to Long Beach. So I need to print out my losing ticket for Stephen Malazzi to sign.
Lobby these sports books to give us head to heads with Malazzi in it versus, you know, someone
Spencer Boyd or somebody. I love
it. Oh, come on. You got to give me that one.
That's what I'm saying.
I mean, listen, in the Young truck, I'd give it to Spencer. We've had some. Come on now.
Yeah.
I'd rather be buying his money on that odd, you know?
There you go.
Yeah.
Funny stuff.
All right. Special Monday edition of Stacking Denny's is complete. Sorry we did not have much for Martinsville, but it's early in the week. Follow Nick and I on Twitter. You're going to get all of our information there.
And
we'll talk to you guys next week.
Yeah,
absolutely. Follow Malazzi as well at Driver Malazzi on Twitter or X or whatever it's called. But
Driver Malaz.
Driver Malaz. Yep.
I dropped the I.
There we go. Thank you guys. See ya.